After the murder of Ryoko Owari's Emerald Magistrate, the Emerald Champion was forced to appoint someone to replace the Emperor's agent of justice in perhaps the most populous and certainly the most corrupt city in the Empire. Eschewing tradition, the Emerald Champion appointed not one, but four Emerald Magistrates to replace the murdered Naritoki. The aloof and monk-like Dragon Clan Shugenja, Agasha Yugare. Bayushi Taiyo of the Scorpion Clan, who unbeknownst to the others was really the original Taiyo sister, who assumed her brother's identity after murdering him and moved to the city with his brother's widow and children, now his wife and children. The battle-hardened Crab Clan warrior Hida Ishii, who brought along his veteran deputies. And Kakita Aji, the Crane Clan duelist with a taste for drinking, prostitutes, and opium.
When the new magistrates first arrived, they were met at the magistrate's residence by an assistant of the Emerald Champion, Asako Anjo, who had put together a dossier of information about the city. Besides merely handing over this dossier, Anjo also put the magistrates through a series of tests to determine the hierarchy of importance each of them placed on the tenets of Bushido. After the difficult questions were answered, or in some cases dodged, Anjo determined that Bayushi Taiyo was to be considered the lead magistrate in the city, and would generally be the person with whom the Emerald Champion and his assistants would correspond.
As the magistrates settled into their new accommodations, they found themselves invited to two different welcome parties on the same night. One invitation came from the Shisuro family, the Scorpion Clan family, which ruled the city. The other was from the Unicorn Clan, which played a significant economic role in the city and held a lot of sway with the Emerald Champion. Both groups were power players, and snubbing either group could be a severe misstep for the new magistrates. Their answer was to split up. Taiyo, Aji, and Yugare would attend the party held by the Shosuros in their palace, and Hida Ishii alone would attend the function held by the Unicorn Clan.
Ishii soon discovered that the party was being held not by the Unicorn Clan proper, but by Ide Baranato, a wealthy and influential patron of merchants in the Hatamoto, a clan representative in the city in all but name. Throughout the meeting, they established a good rapport based on the idea that their clans understood a lot more about the world, and justice in particular, than the others gave them credit for. Ishii also learned that Baranato was upset by the corruption he saw in the city, and particularly the opium trade, something for which he blamed the death of his son. Not surprisingly, it was a sore subject that Baranato quickly changed. Baranato also informed Ishii that Naritoki's former bodyguard, a ronin named Ample, was the type who may have been involved in some nefarious dealings. Baranato himself, though, seemed to have nothing but respect for the murdered magistrate.
Meanwhile, the other magistrates met with Shosuro Hayobu, the governor of the city, her son, Shosuro Jocho, the head of the Thunder Guard, and Yogu Osako, the regional magistrate. The governor described her commitment to order being maintained in the city, and everyone present assured the new magistrates that not only did they have nothing to do with their predecessor's murder, but that they were all very upset about it. After all, as he was a man almost universally respected in Ryoko Owari, a man committed to keeping the city prosperous and running smoothly. But the Shosuros are masters of secrets, and while the meeting proceeded with general pleasantries, certain things seemed to come to light that not everyone wished to share. Aji's predilection for opium was brought forward, though tactfully ignored by the magistrate's hosts, while something was uncovered about Taiyo that no one in the room let on they realized.
Sometime later, Yugare and Ishii encountered a fire raging in the merchant quarter. Two groups of local firemen were on the scene, but instead of fighting the blaze, they were fighting one another. The Strong-Arm Firemen and the Temple Road Firemen, rivals in this part of the city, were brawling over one incurring on the other's turf. The magistrates attempted first oratory and then force to make the firemen do their nominal jobs, and though they were ultimately successful, they appeared to outsiders to have embarrassed themselves, struggling against the will of their social lessers. They particularly embarrassed themselves in front of the Thunder Guard, who eventually showed up and got the scene more thoroughly under control. This was also the first time the magistrates saw the true nature of the firemen in action. While they were responsible for dealing with fires, the firemen of Ryoko Owari had long ago set themselves up as gangs that guarded their turf, interests, and profits as closely and often as violently as any other group of criminals.
Bayushi Taiyo and his wife Hikari, having come to the City of Lies with more than a few of their own, were left to wonder how they could best protect their family and their secrets while living amid a group of detectives, one of whom seemed to be all too excited at how full of opium the city was. Hikari's suggestion was that they move into their own residence, something Taiyo took into consideration.
Meanwhile, Aji, true to form, met with a merchant who bribed him with a cask of sake. In return, he provided her with travel papers to the capital to sell her wares, something the merchant suggested was almost standard practice.
Looking over the available information in the dossier, the magistrates decided to focus on two major issues: the murder of their predecessor, and the bandit Fade, whom had been plaguing the city. While Taiyo and Ishii went to speak with Ample, Naritoki's surviving bodyguard, Yugurei and Aji headed to a lunar cave in the foothills to the north of the city, which they believed could be a suitable hideout for a group of bandits.
Arriving at the cave, after a 15-mile ride from the city, the magistrates made the hike up into the cave to discover that it was empty, at least physically. The beautiful cave, with its crystalline formations and hole that let in natural light, seemed to have a mysterious air about it. Beseeching the kami, the elemental spirits, Yugurei discovered that something dark was happening here, periodically, like the blinking of an eye. Something Yugurei decided was connected to the phases of the moon, which could be seen through the large hole in the cave ceiling.
Meanwhile, Taiyo and Ishii ventured to the fisherman's quarter to meet with a gambler named Lean Meat, who they had heard Ample was currently working for as a bodyguard. He agreed to help them, and to get further info, the magistrates hired Ample as a bodyguard. Afterward, however, their efforts encountered more difficulty. On their way to speak with Eyebrows, the Eta, who handled Naritoki's body, and who was known for his ability to ascertain a lot of information about what happened to a person in their final moments through the study of their corpse, the magistrates were stopped by the Thunder Guard. Not wanting to scare off Lean Meat, Taiyo and Ishii had declined to wear any symbol of their office. The Thunder Guard, thinking it extremely odd that samurai would want to go into the leather workers' quarter, or would know any of these Eta by name, assumed something was up and a terse standoff ensued. Unwilling to reveal their identities, the magistrates headed home with a significant distaste for the Thunder Guard. When Eyebrows eventually showed up at their residence, he, with the appropriate demureness befitting his station, explained that Naritoki was killed by a group who seemed to have blinded his bodyguard, lit his carriage on fire, barricaded him in, and stabbed him through the doors. Unfortunately, none of this was new information, as Eyebrows had been consulted when Anjo put his dossier together. The information about the fire, particularly that the carriage seemed to have been doused with something flammable, made the magistrates suspect either firemen or perhaps the mysterious group known as the Ryoko Ninja.
Yugurei and Aji returned to the city the following day, just in time to see a keg of sake delivered to the magistrate's residence as a gift to Aji. He tried to explain it away, but it rankled his fellow magistrates as they saw through his excuses, and their opinions of him became more suspect.
Several days later, Taiyo invited Ishii to dinner with him and his wife. After some polite conversation, Taiyo attempted to gain Ishii's trust. Revealing her true identity and that she replaced her brother after his death, she glossed over the details of her murdering him and asked that Ishii keep her secret. Ishii, always the good soldier, or perhaps as a man who loved his family, agreed to aid his comrade and keep his secret.
One of the more important responsibilities of the Emerald Magistrates is collecting imperial taxes. They don't have to go around and argue with merchants themselves, they have tax assessors who are hired for that very role, but they have to make sure things stay safe and things stay honest. The latter, the magistrates of Ryoko Owari were able to do in spades, even impressing Ide Baranato, a man with many friends among the Emerald Magistrates. The former, however, was where they were found wanting. Assessors were assaulted, quarrels with merchants turned into brawls, and bandits flat out plundered some of the tax revenue. What was sent to the capital was sent with teeth gritted in anticipation of the Emerald Champion's disappointment. Things got worse, however, when crowds of peasants, upset about the imperial tax rate, formed a mob outside the walls of the city. Similarly, a mob of angry merchants rallied inside the city, just outside the noble quarter. Governor Hyobu, a woman who made very clear the degree of importance she put on maintaining order in the city, looked to the imperial magistrates to address these complaints about imperial taxes. Unfortunately, here too, they did not rise to the occasion, and in the end they parlayed some of their favor with Governor Hyobu to simply get her to pay off the crowds, something she did through merchants, firemen, and other various go-betweens, allowing the magistrates to see how extensive her influence was.
Hoping to meet with each of his colleagues, to build their trust in him, and to find out what makes them tick, Tayo held yet another dinner, this time with Yugure. Tayo learned that Yugure did not want his family to move to the city, because he viewed it as too dangerous. However, he worried that while he was away, his sister-in-law would hold too much sway over his family estate, given that she was the widow of his older brother and that her son had not yet come of age. Tayo expressed a desire to meet Yugure's family and even hinted at wedding one of his sons to Yugure's daughter to bring their families closer together. Further, he asked a favor of Yugure that he, as a shugenja, bless his children to keep them safe in the city that Yugure admitted was very dangerous.
As spring turned to fall, something dark seemed to find the household of the Emerald Magistrates. Ishii was awoken by a voice he had heard before. There in his chambers, the Oni, which killed his family, reached out to him, reminding him of how weak he was by comparison, how he couldn't defend his family, and how he had to run all the way to this city. The demon stood before Ishii, taunting him. Mustering the will to strike at the demon, Ishii grabbed his sword and ran it through, only to realize that in his sleep, or perhaps in delusion, he had killed the butler of the magistrate's residence. Reluctantly, he explained what happened to his colleagues, and Yugure uncovered that something dark was indeed present in the room. But the matter sowed a seed of doubt between Ishii and his colleagues.
Soon afterwards, Tayo did something he had been meaning to do since he arrived in the city, meet with his kinsman, Bayushi Korachika. A wealthy merchant with a license to grow, harvest, and process legal opium, Korachika's influence was matched really only by the heads of the city's other Scorpion Clan families. While much of the conversation was niceties, eventually, Tayo professed his loyalty to their family and clan, and brought up that he could perhaps better do his job if he could keep an ear to the ground. Korachika was willing to provide him that resource, and thus Tayo left this friendly family meeting as a shadow owner of a sake house that saw its fair share of underhanded dealings, the Emerald Cup.
Ishii, still stunned by the morning's vision and involuntary manslaughter, was visited by one of his deputies. Seeming nervous and overly formal, the soldier eventually stammered out that he was seeking Ishii's blessing to marry a local woman. It soon came to light that she was not only not a samurai, but a hinin, the class only slightly above the untouchable Edda. Ishii was reminded that he had a dozen deputies in this city who were not at all used to dealing with the degree of corruption this place had to offer.
Aji too was visited by someone making a request. Miramoto Ogai, a dignitary from the Dragon Clan, known for having a good bit of influence in the capital. What he wanted was the protection of the local Emerald Magistrates, particularly from some local toughs he claimed threatened him. Aji, seeing an opportunity to do his job and go out on the town, agreed to aid Ogai, and soon the two of them hit as many sake houses as the merchant quarter had to offer, drinking and gambling with abandon. Reluctant to head into the licensed quarter, Ogai eventually ripped through the merchant quarter's sake houses and gambling establishments, and he and Aji found themselves in the Emerald Cup. Unfortunately for Aji, who only wanted to enjoy himself and guard Ogai, Tayo was visiting his establishment. Pulling Aji aside for a private conversation, Tayo offered to help Aji by giving him a safe place he could indulge his habits. Tayo's meaning was far from subtle, as they had the conversation in a room filled with the lingering smell of opium from previous occupants, and Aji's nerves were raised at the presence of his beloved dragon's breath. But Aji declined. He stormed away, but in a manner that made his opium habit all too clear to the staff of the Emerald Cup, a staff that was still technically bound to Bayushi Korachika.
While all of this intrigue was occurring, Yugure wandered the city attempting to divine the will of the spirits, trying anything he could to unearth information that could help them with their rapidly accumulating investigations. Seeking the answer to Narutoki's death, his entreaties were answered with a cryptic response. Steer away from things considered honorable and great, but keep on the lookout for great virtue. Furthering his trance-like focus on the will of the spirits, giving over his mind to the will of the kami, Yugure heard a strange voice, the voice of a spirit the likes of which he had never known. It called to him, it beckoned him, and as he headed closer to it, deeper into the fisherman's quarter, he found himself at the discarded body of a dead horse. At this grisly scene, the voice became clear and made its proposal. It could answer his questions. It could provide him the information he so desperately wanted. All it needed was some of his blood. With that, it could, like a hound in the woods, find all the answers he needed to help him. Though tempted, Yugure declined, unsure of what he spoke with, and no closer to answering his questions.
Each month, it is expected that Emerald Magistrates provide the Emerald Champion, or his appointed designee, a report regarding the state of affairs of the area under their jurisdiction. It is expected that periodically, particularly when there are big events to discuss, the meeting be in person. For our magistrates, this would mean making the weeks-long journey back and forth between Ryoko Owari and the capital Odasan Uchi. But at least once a year, the Emerald Champion makes his own rounds, and he could be met in the far closer Lion Clan city of Kaiyuden Ikoma. Meeting with Doji Satsume, the Emerald Champion, would be a stressful matter under most circumstances. But when he has reason to question your methods and outcomes, the meeting would be nerve-wracking.
The first matter the Emerald Champion addressed was the discipline of Ishii's deputies. Without his permission, they had moved into the fisherman's quarter, they had begun to associate with the local firemen, and they had taken to gambling, drinking, and likely carousing with all manner of unsavory elements. Promising to keep his troops in check, Ishii was left to wonder who was helping to bring his troops down this dangerous path.
Aji also received some of the champion's scorn. Miyamoto Ogai was well known in the imperial court, and thus rumors regarding him moved quickly. Aji was put on the spot to defend his actions with Ogai, explaining that he was merely acting to protect a visitor to the city who thought his life was in danger. Left out of the story, of course, was their drinking, gambling, and Aji's budding romantic affair with the mistress of the House of Foreign Stories, the Gaijin Magda.
The most significant critique, however, was leveled at the magistrates as a group, who were asked to explain how they could allow a retinue of men-at-arms to cause so much bloodshed in the city they were sworn to protect. The magistrates described the situation to the champion, and although he got a far less detailed version, we learned exactly what happened. How Yugure and Tayo were alerted to some kind of disturbance going on in the fisherman's quarter. How Yogo Osako and the Thunder Guard did not want them interfering. How they had to agree to follow Osako's lead to gain their cooperation. And what they saw when they arrived. Tayo and Yugure told the champion about the large group of men-at-arms that a tall and fearsome samuraiko had brought into the city, armed but disguised in peasant cloaks. And how this force seemed to be striking down anyone they perceived as connected to the opium trade. They described how slowly the Thunder Guard surrounded and wounded, captured or killed the men-at-arms, till only the fierce samuraiko remained. That's when Tayo and Yugure spoke up and convinced her to surrender, claiming they would hear the grievance that brought her here, and give it the respect it deserved. In custody, the samuraiko, Matsu Fukushu of the Lion Clan, explained her quest for vengeance to all the magistrates that had assembled outside her jail cell. She claimed that her sister had been poisoned by criminals in this city, and that she came here to take revenge on her relations' killers, meting out the justice this cesspool of a city seemed incapable of. When pressed, it was discovered that her sister had died of an opium overdose, but Fukushu, in a fury, sought to punish all of those connected to the drug she could find, those selling it, using it, or harboring either. Ishii remembered her from years earlier, prior to his appointment to Ryoko Owari. He remembered investigating the site of a small battle, a border skirmish really, between the Lion and Unicorn clans, a skirmish after which rumors of blood and cruelty swirled, the kind of rumors that would make a Crab Clan magistrate suspect the involvement of the Shadowlands or its corrupting influence. Discovering that the newly promoted commanding officer of the Lion forces was the woman that now sat in this cell, Ishii's interest was piqued. But like that encounter long ago, he could only feel the fury she had within her, could not tell if there was anything darker there than rage and a thirst for vengeance. Each of the magistrates had an extremely different reaction to her before she was put to death. Yugure, perhaps feeling that Fukushu's sister had merely succumbed to the corruption of the city, felt no sympathy for her, and condemned her assault on the inhabitants of the Fisherman's Quarter. Aji, seemingly trying to keep his head down during a debate over an issue far too close to home for him, did just that and let the others decide Fukushu's fate. Tayo, particularly after hearing her vengeful tirades and seeing her fury thrown at Yugure, co-signed with Yogo Osaka the necessary paperwork to approve the execution. Ishii, meanwhile, listened and connected with Fukushu's thirst for justice and rage in a world too corrupt to give it to her. He promised, on his honor, that he would bring the peddlers of this poison to justice.
As the magistrates finished the story of how the intruders were captured, questioned, and eventually beheaded, the Emerald Champion seemed skeptical, but content with their performance thus far. Particularly, they figured out, because of a well-placed compliment they received from Ide Baronato for their very honest handling of the tax collection, though other aspects of that endeavor left a lot to be desired. The champion provided the magistrates with a new imperial seal, which was supposed to be harder to forge, and he sent them on their way to make the day or so journey back to Ryoko Owari.
Amid heavy rain and thunder, the magistrates are waylaid by bandits. Their horses killed and their carriage overturned, they are separated from one another. What is clear is that these are no ordinary bandits. They are well armed, trained, and organized. Worst of all, they seem to know what they are looking for, and soon steal the new Imperial Seal. Fighting valiantly, but being driven back, it's Yugure's magic that seems to turn the tide as he calls upon the Kami and strikes one of the bandits with a bolt of lightning. Galloping off, with the seal in his possession, the wounded bandit Lord Fade vanishes with his brigands as the hard rain falls on the hands of the Emperor's justice.